Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Mathematics Simplified by W.R. Hill, a 1921 mathematics book. And we're up to episode 5, and let's try and get an understanding of it. William Hill, Bill Hill, produced a series of educational blocks and ideas, a teacher's set and a much smaller scale children's set, as we find it, as we discover. And this is a sort of unique document, and rather than just sort of attributing it to the sort of cult of, oh, isn't this person fantastic, I think there's, you know, on reflection, it is the fact that it had a limited practical application in the classroom. It was a product sold in the classroom, actually brought together some keen insights and ideas that were floating around at the time, and so rather than getting an averaged publication which was aimed at in academia or to promote careers, this is actually to promote a product, and in that sense it's got a scope and a clarity which is not very rarely seen. So it's not a curriculum thing, it's not a broad top-down thing. It's from underneath poking up with a one product being focused at different areas, rather than, it's sort of a different approach. So it's the interaction of the task at hand, the audience at hand, producing what's going ahead. And in a sense, we'll just go into what the blocks were. So they're wooden blocks, small wooden cubes which are painted either white or red, and they're unit ones, half ones, about four half ones should build up, and then about 10 blocks and 100 blocks, and just by putting the blocks away you get the sort of the decimal order of things. And very much at the time, metric was not, a lot of things we take for granted were just futuristic pipe dreams. It's sort of like teaching our generation now to pilot spacecrafts, which we cannot possibly think of. But rather than being a genius thing, I think it's the actual blocks themselves actually drew, actually a part of the authorship of it's going ahead. And so to this thing that I'm giving you a podcast now, it's an interaction that I'll give you a podcast now. It is an interaction with the technology, the Podomation technology, where I can just do a podcast, put it in, and it gets broadcast and put into an app. So what I'm doing is actually linked to technology environment. It's not necessarily a reasoned process. It's actually the actual artifacts actually interact with the culture to produce it forward. Then you've got sort of the happenstance of various things coming through. So in this case, there was a degree of entrepreneurialism, there was a degree of studying of education, education science, education, an educated view to education coming through, and an emergence of Australia at a time where there was sort of a new federalism, a new government, and so there was this casting around for ideas. So there were opportunities there that weren't as established, were open when, before the major groups came into gel, solidify and slow down the actual application, so things coming forward. And so too, with me, you'd say, well, why am I podcasting? Well, I'm not podcasting because I thought it was a good idea. It's part of cognitive rehabilitation to actually bounce back and be able to put things together. So I'm not, I'm actually in the location by a certain amount of chance. And similar here, this is a certain amount of chance. There was a certain amount of skill sets which were just brought together. And, but moreover, one can see that applying mathematics, say to solving problems, I'm just going through to using word recognition to extract data from signals. I have certain, say, in order to further automate automate the podcast. And I can also see a sort of a similar parallel that there is certain information here that certain algorithms that we applied. So there's a commercial algorithm, well, it's all the blocks, another academic algorithms, does it fit into the academic problems of the time with the audience of the time, and does that fully extract the data from it? And of course there is some very interesting data here. This is the portrayal of decimal points. Maybe seem trivial to you, but it is an interesting thing to see how the actual decimal points are portrayed differently here. Some of the insights into cultural affairs, sort of the class sizes, boys and girls, and respect for various people, is brought out. It's a very interesting aspect to do it. And some mathematical techniques which are lost, like the means and extremes idea, that's a lost, and it's signs associated, there's mathematical symbols associated with, that's unique. And sort of some of the typographic way things are laid out, that's also unique, speaks of another era. The other interesting thing is what people, it's also got a conceptualization of what the need is. There's a need of teachers to be relevant. There's a need of people to be educated, but also educated to have mathematics appropriate for their environment. And that's basically to function as citizens and not be ripped off. And it is also interesting that there are things in here that are really novel. The idea of applying a handicap to gifted people, such that they can compete against other people in the classroom as a technique, as opposed to giving different activities to different people, or differentiation in a strange way. There's a whole lot of mathematical looks, and the ability to see a linear, or a chain of almost like seamounts. These things come up, they burst for a certain time into the public consciousness, and then they submerge underneath. And there's a lot of activity underneath the water, and there's a series of things, and they're all connected together with similar problems, with them not surviving in the harsh environment, the sparse market. Australia's a very dilute, sparse market, but also it attracts a lot of what you'd call squatters. This is there's a sort of a squatter culture. That is, you get into an area and you just declare it's yours, and after a time the ownership gets a bit fuzzy. So there are people who are in the education area who, when you look at it, actually don't have an educational or innovation track record, but they're controlling that area. And that's a sort of, there's a squatocracy, intellectual squatocracy, that we're looking at. And there is, of course, ways through it. Now, we're going to start off with, this, at page 94, and see how far we can get through this. Looking at something called interest. Now, this is very important because it's teaching kids money, and it's so much curiosity with it. Fundamental principle underlying banking processes may be concretely demonstrated. A story is dramatized, illustrating position of a lender, bank manager, and borrower. So this is i.e. that you're given positions and there's an experience followed. So let's say in long division there are people who come up to get their blocks and they miss out. This one, we'll just read it through. As in the profit and loss games, one cube represents pound notes, 10 sticks, 10 pound notes, and 100 pound blocks. One child is chosen to represent a bank manager at the table in front of the class. The other child represents a lender who requires at what rate is the paying interest to deposit. I'm being told the interest rate is 4%. He deposits £100 and the bank maintains a receipt for that amount. Another child, acting as a borrower, brings to him title deeds of a property, a shop which he owns. He wishes to buy goods to stock his shop and requires what rate the bank charges on loans. He's been told 7%. He rents the title deeds of the property, valued at £1,000, to a loan of £100. The title deeds are left to the bank as security. It's explained that the borrower has met with success in the business during the following year. To illustrate the increase of his capital, several £10 notes and pound notes are added. The borrower then returns the £100 they borrowed and £7 of interest on the amount. He obtains the title deeds back and the debt is cleared. The lender, in the meantime, has decided to withdraw all his money from the bank. He presents his receipt to the bank or a bank book and given to the bank manager, £100 notes and £4 as interest. The bank then has £3 as commission on the transaction. A discussion naturally follows above a demonstration of this work in school banks, state and commonwealth saving banks, etc. Terms such as interest, principal, deposit, withdrawal are introduced and explained. Well, this is interesting. The use of a checkbook, current account, fixed deposits may build up with stage while the imagery is fresh. Care must not time taken to vary the principal, time and rate in the first exercises. The variation should be gradual. £100 unit or deposit is retained and the exercise is paying interest on £100 for a year at 4, 5, 6 a given. Time is varied against the next stage of work. Exercises on fighting interest on £100 and 4% etc. for 6, 3 months lead to the grasp of a fraction in regard to time. Other exercises are then given by varying the principles, such as fighting the in year at 4% on 100, 250, 25, etc. When these ratios of the principal time rate are clearly grasped, exercises involving variation of other factors are given. The processes are demonstrated first concretely and the principle of the operation is obtained. So this is really a first concrete demonstration. I wish I could get just write down these principles to get across, because I'm thinking of this in terms of chemistry. When it is clearly grasped, it may be expressed in the form of a formula for the application to other similar problems. I do like that. This is where, you know, people, rather than just giving the formula and apply it, it's they're giving concrete exercises first, and then the formula is given. The interest amount, time, rate, and principal may all be discovered through a slight alteration of the illustration given by the first step. To find simple interest on £200 for 3 years at 4%, set out 200 blocks to represent the principal invested place for 1 cubes besides each 100 block to represent the interest. The same amount each set out each year and the third year, giving a total for 3 years, 8 each. So simple interest, £24. The number of interest units contained in the principal is 200 on 100, i.e. 2 units per 100 blocks. I wish I could understand that. It will be seen that interest can be reckoned readily as 3 rows of two groups of 4 blocks each, i.e. 6 fours, 8s. To find the amount given the principal rate and time, solve the amount and you realize that it's 224. Given the principal rate of interest, find the time. Set out 200 blocks representing the principal of commerce, plus 4 groups representing the rate of each block. After the first year's placement of 2 groups, there are still some left. The second, third, and so 3 years. Given the principal and time and interest, find the rate set out, etc. Okay, I'll still read this. Unfortunately, there's you probably can't hear it. There's still birds having a big raucous thing next up here. So set out 200 blocks and place the cubes one at a time in the front of the block for the first year, repeating the same detached position for the third year. 6 cubes are required for the first complete placement. There are 4 such placements before 24 blue cubes are placed. So the rate is 4%. Given the amount, rate, time, find the principal and process this goes forward. Oh, I suppose I will read it to you. The amount is 224, 4%, the time is 3 years. 12 units are added to show the interest on 100 blocks for 3 years at 4%. This is found to divide by 200 blocks and 24 units exactly twice, so the principal is twice the interest, i.e. £200. A bit unimpressed, but I can see how you need to do this. It's all compound interest. Stocks and shares, present worth. Okay. For simplicity in demonstrating compound interest, a high percentage of interest is changed to namely 10%. The principal taken is £1,000 in 3 years. See figure 2. 3 years. 1,000 cubes, cube represents the principal. At 10%, it's a tenth. The interest on the first year is 100. The amount at the end of the first year is 1,100. The interest at the second year is a tenth, plus a tenth for the £100. A 100 blocks is then a tenth stick. The second year's amount is 1,210. Again, a tenth is taken for the third year, a 100 block, 2/10 cube unit added. The amount for the third year is £331. Withdraw the principal and 331 is left. So the compound interest on £1,000 over 3 years at 10% is amount as £331. To name the formula for the operation, take the amount 1,301 and construct it into a cube of 11 units edge. This is 11 cubed. The principal is also a cube, but the units of 10 each. In the process, the edge of the cube increases the ratio of a tenth in 3 dimensions. Okay, well, this one, it's amount, given the amount of time, this is really exponential. I like this. My dad used to teach me sort of things like this. Given the amount of time, the rate in compound interest, find the principal. From the above, reversing the operation, we find that the amount is A to the 100 on 100 plus R to the N. So this is the principal for the amount. And this is just a basic equation. But this is really interesting because this principal rate, etc., really is the basis of chemical reactions. You know, how you start off, you light something and then it blows, goes and blows up. Both of our formula, and this is basically, you have a loan, it blows up, or you take a loan out and you just have to keep on shoveling money in to prevent it blowing up. Both the above formula may be obtained from concrete illustration for 2 years period as well. This is done by finding compound interest on £100 for 2 years and 10%, giving the amount of 212. That's really interesting that you go across. Stocks and shares. The following problems may illustrate with counters, imitation bonds, and scripts for being used in conjunction. This is brilliant. This is stocks and shares before the Great Depression. Isn't it amazing? Income derived from investment is £400 and 4% at 80, at 80 itself. Can I quickly say that, Australia, we went into the Great Depression, and what happened was Mother Britain hit the Great Depression. Everyone emptied out your money. All the money was scraped off Australia. Everyone went into the banks and gave Britain money. So what happened is that Britain was in problem. So Australia withdrew money. They had bond raising things, dinners, and they just raised all the money, took all the money out of the Australian economy, sent it to Britain, and of course the Australian economy totally collapsed. So we went in for a Great Depression, as bad as as anywhere in the world. It was a dreadful Great Depression. Of course, the GFC came along, and we said, hang on, we're going to do the opposite. And we just printed money so it was out of fashion. And so we avoided the GFC. I just set out 100 blocks representing £400 cash. Each bond is purchased for £80 representing 8 10 sticks. 5 bonds are thus bought and 4 1 cubes representing the rate set out on each of the 5 bonds. This gives a total of 20. Therefore, the income derived is £20. Stock value. The value of £100 is invested at 4% at 80% is solved. For each 5 bonds, each stock value of £100, the pieces of paper may represent the bonds, each of £100. Therefore, the total stock is a value of £500. Find the gain or loss made of investing £400 at 4% at 80 and 80 and selling out at 82. Again, under a number of bonds, bought at 5, 10s, 2s and 1s are set out. This gives a total of 400 and is drawn, leaving a gain of 10, a gain of £10. Hooray for you little people before the Great Depression. 70. Present worth. It may be illustrated in a very similar way to finding the principal in a simple interest problem. What is the present value of a promissory note for $206 in 6 months with an interest rate being 6%? With 100 blocks unit to represent £100, 3 small cubes are added to represent the interest for 6 months. The present value is seen to be 103 of the promised value. Hence, the present value of 206 promissory note is £200. This is checked with the blocks, 6 small cubes representing a £3 discount on each £100. Well, I used to have to raise a couple of million dollars for a robotics company to set up, and I was there in the big end of town of Sydney, and the accountants then, and there's something very similar to this called net present value, and with my different assumptions, and just knowing this, I blew them away, got the money, but we still struggled. You know, still didn't get the business things correct. Oh, the metric system. Now, this is the metric system in 1930. By the previous actual handling of counters, the child has been forming unconsciously a foundation of very different ideas for metric measures for its future use. So this is an interesting thing, that how metric is coming in. His mind has already been prepared by noticing the difference between centimetres, decimeter units, and also easily grasps the names indicating values. It appeals to the sense of humour of the child who has been wading through the most complex jumble of weights and measures that the French and other continental children learn almost all their tables of weights and measures by memorising 9 words of metrics. Metre, gram, litre, deci, centre, milli, decta, hecto, kilo. For this reason, the lesson proceeds may be written on the blackboard as follows. A fractional part is deci, centi, milli. Unit is meter, liter, gram. Multiple is kilo, hecto, hectoliter, deca. I mean, this is something obviously lost. But I remember my father telling me this before metric came in, so I would have been 5, I think. The length. The demonstration commences with the metre length composed of 10 sticks arranged in a straight line. The child is told it is called a metre, the French for yard measure, a measure. It is compared with the length of an English yard, found to be 3.5 inches longer than the yard. Division into tenths, hundredths and thousandths is illustrated with the length of the stick in a small cube. The thickness of a millimetre cards, respectively. The Latin prefixes, so it's Latin for small and Greek for bigger. Deci, centi and milli. Rapid recognition of each of the four measures follows. As I was going to say, is that we've really lost deci. As each measure is made clear, the child is asked to show the distance by indicating both hands and the length of a metre, decimeter, etc. Major measures associated with the Greek prefixes dekta, hekta, kilo may be thought as measuring estimated distance by extended work by dimensions of 10. And so this is before, you know, metric came in to Australia, so we didn't know that we were only going to do the kilo and do the milli or centi. The length of one classroom, 33 feet, represents a decimeter. So 33 feet, that is just impossibly small. 63 people in 33 feet. 33 feet is basically 11 meters. That's a very tiny classroom. It represents a decimeter. The distance to the school gate, 1,000 yards, 110 yards represents a hectometer, while the distance to the outstanding landmark, 1,001 meters, represents a kilometer. K-I-L-O hyphen meter. Isn't that invasive? This is amazing. Other distances up to about 10 kilometers might be estimated. Revision of the measures is made by reference to the concrete. Okay, a table of measures compiled. So he's got hectometers, decimeters, and stuff like that. Emphasis should be placed on the fact that the reduction of the above measure is affected by expressing the missing unit with zeros. That's really interesting, i.e. he's got a midpoint dot, which now means something different, and he's got commas, and we've got rid of the commas. Now, schools, they still put in commas, and if you were to speak to a teacher and say, no, you don't do that, why, they would look at the US standard out of Boulder, Colorado, NIST, and the documentation, you bring it to them, and they'd just dismiss it and say, well, look, my curriculum says I do it the old way. They would agree, and walk past, and they'd be doing the same thing, same error. A comparison of this reduction is made that the Klomper's English measure of reducing a mile to a furlong to a chain to a pole to yards to feet to 9 inches to inches. Problems is based on metric measurements are solved before proceeding to the other internal steps. Surface measurement. The unit is a square meter. The child makes out this unit by placing 10 of the decimeter sticks in a straight line to form a meter's length. 30 more sticks are placed to complete the remaining outer edge of the square meter. The blocks measured... this is a bit problematic. The blocks measured and the top surface of it is found to be exactly one square decimeter. 10 of the blocks exactly one row long to the edge of the square meter. As 10 such rows can be made, a child recognises that 10 square decimeters, 100 square decimeters equals 1 square metre. I submit, this is a thing that people don't understand, that a million cubic centimetres are in a cubic metre. Because it's a million, 10 times 10 times 10. Is that, 10? No, 1,000. Is that right? No, 100 times 100 times 100 is, that's right, in a millimeter. 100 square centimeters equals 1 square decimeter, etc. Principle of measurement of solidity. I love the way they've used solidity rather than volume, which is just bizarre. I don't know where that came from. This is established by comparing a centimeter cube with a decimeter cube. We have already found that 1,000 small cubes equals 1 large cube. 10 small cubes equals a stick. 10 sticks equals a block. And 10 blocks equals a constructed cube. He has learnt to think of 10 stacks and 10 rows and 10 each, hence 1,000 ratio. By appealing to his imagination, the other measures are obtained. So 1,000 cubic millimetres equals a cubic. Centimeter. Oh, yeah, 10 times is 10. I find that really hard to believe. Oh, yeah, it is true. Okay. K Capacity is filled by taking a unit of a litre measure, the capacity of a container specially constructed to hold a cubic decimeter. The interaction of capacity and solidity is demonstrated by measuring the constructed cube with a 10 stick and placing a decimeter cube in the litre container. Litre holds exactly a decimeter. That's interesting. So he's got capacity and solidity as different aspects of volume, different words for volume. So solidity is a solid volume, and capacity is a liquid volume. Factors and prime numbers. Here we go. We're up to page 106, so we may be getting through this. 72. Factors and prime numbers. The counters are admirably suited for testing division of numbers. 10 sticks, 100 blocks, and 1,000 cubes are each divisible by 10 to 5. Therefore, any number which has the figure 0 in its position is divisible by 10, 2, and 5. We've got 2, 4, 6 units position are divisible, and 8 unit cubes are divisible by 2 groups without a remainder. So any number divisible by 2 if the last figure is 2, 4, 6, 8. Similarly, any number divisible by 5 if the last figure is 0 and 5. And the 100 blocks are divisible by 4 and 25, and 1,000 by 8 and 125. Hence, the number is divisible by 4. I get my dad used to show this beautiful thing where you've got a line, and you draw lines for a different line, and just by drawing lines on a piece of graph paper, you can see holes in the mesh for different ratios. It was really, really good. I wish I could explain it, but it's a way of ruling lines across, so that you hit all the factors with it. So what do you do? So you've got the points, which are the whole numbers. So 1 to 100 x, 1 to 100 y, and you draw a line through everything. Well, you don't have everything that's a divisible one, that's no interest. But everything which is divisible, even divisibly, you draw a line, so it's 0, 2, 4, 8. And starting from 2, you also draw up. So you just draw these parallel lines of 2 spacing. Then starting at 3, you draw the 3, 6, 9 spacing across for each 3. So you draw those across. And so you can eliminate all factors in its space. And similarly, you just keep on going by prime numbers, keep on drawing the primes across it, and eventually you can spot other primes. It's really an interesting thing to see. Okay, and there's other, I'll have to show other demonstrations of it. The highest, 125 as the last two figures, the number is divisible by 125. The highest common factor. To find the HCF, the 24 and 36 set out groups of 24 cubes and 36 cubes, it will be seen that 24 may be divided into 2, 3, 4, 6, 8 and 12 cubes. 36 may be divided into 2, 3, 9, 6, 12 and 18 cubes. It is observed that both groups can be divided into groups of 2, 3, 4, 6, 12 cubes. 12 is observed as the highest common factor, the least common multiple. Find the LCM of 2, 3, 6, 8, the groups counters containing 2, 3, 4, 6, 8 counters set out. It's seen that the 2 and 3 groups are contained exactly 6 groups, and that the 4 group contains exactly 8 groups. It is any group that contains evenly a 6th group and an 8th group that also contains 2, 3 and 4 groups. Attention is then confined to the 6 and 8 groups. The multiple groups are each made in order of even quantities. It's not until the 4s and 6s and 8s are set out in quantities even that, so 24 has common multiples of 2, 3, 4, 6 and 8. This is checked by division to the name groups. It is discovered that 48 and 72 are common multiples of 24, and the so 24 is the lowest common multiple of 2, 3, 4, 6, and 8. The application of HCF and LCM to Volk fraction extends the earlier work performed with simple fractions. I've got to think, the lowest quantum multiple is what you put it as a denominator. Okay, and the highest common factor. I don't know what you use HCF for. Squares and square roots. Taking the edge of a small cube as a unit of length and the face of the small cube as a unit of area, set out the squares in units and 2 to 3 units length. I really, really do think that this is a complementary piece and that we have sufficient wealth to actually have one of these units out to do exploratory work and feedback. And things are a bit more things. We do have a combination that we could actually put these out with a touchpad and actually gather direct data from them. I have a research problem, a program in my head of how to do this. Taking the edge of a small cube as a unit length and one face of the small cube is the unit of area, set out the squares, the edges of 2 to 3 unit lengths. Each square requires 2 dimensions. Now set the square of 10 units length. One edge may be divided into 2 groups of 5 unit length, but the square may be divided into 4 small squares, 25 units areas of each. So 10 squares is 4 times 25, i.e. 100. So each of the 4 small squares contains 5 rows of 5 units in each row. The smaller squares themselves can be arranged in 2 rows, of 2 each. 10 squares is 2 squared times 5 squared. The square root of 10 is 2 times 5 is 10. The square contains the square of its prime factors. Isn't that beautiful? I think that's absolutely lovely. Isn't that lovely? I think that is such a lovely thing to say. But again, I can't see how I can see other ways that you can do it. It won't sound it. I've just been off for a break, hanging up the washing. It's going to be another glorious day out here in Australia. And just overall thinking about what I'm reading and sort of convoluted context where this is all very focused because there's one product. So it's sort of like bringing together ideas in a way which hasn't been brought together. So you get different ways of bringing together ideas. One is, this is a commercial, sort of quasi-commercial stuff that's been brought together about a particular product and bringing all these disparate ideas together. So the blocks happen to lend themselves for all these things, so it's expanding it that way. Whereas if you are in the academic system or the teacher career system, you'll try and bring together things that will support and develop your career. So you'll try and cite people and reinforce the prevailing view. So this is not given here. So it's not so much visionary. Well, there's certain aspects of which is visionary, but it's been visionary because of where it's been set. So it's sort of like, you can see far if you put on a lookout, and these people, and if you put on a trail ascending, you tend to focus on the stairs ascending. So a lot of the academic stuff is produced there, and a lot of your audience, which is built for ascending and not thinking very far, won't promote it. So the interesting thing is that this product didn't take hold, yet there's a hell of a lot of information in here about the techniques which fed in further. So you've got a combination of this maths teacher, and the grandmother was Errol Flynn's piano teacher. So the of the Australian movie stars that went to Hollywood, they were all taught their musics and theatrics by this same family. And so you can see this coming together with the invention of computer music. You can see all these things come together. The forces, the sort of academic forces which produce ideas, many and varied. So it's very interesting to read this and actually contemplate how we value things in the past. Obviously, this is not valued. One of the things is that they have an Australian museum. They had it in the Australian Museum, and that's in the Science Works Museum. I don't know how well it's displayed. This is the old Cyrek computer. And it's very interesting in that the insight of the people displaying, the curators, would not necessarily understand some of the subtle things going on here. So there's whole political things going on, which come out in the design of the computers and stuff like that. So a lot of the paper tape displayed, even in the museum, has jokes written on it, which people are unaware of. So this is really, really intensely interesting. So just for instance, so this is a book, a similar type of book, produced by my father, called Interprogram. There's the Interprogram book. I don't know whether they think in terms of, you know, Science Works. I would be very curious to know whether the Science Works Museum, it's the Dutta Museum in Melbourne, whether they'd fully understand this, and whether we can really introduce some of these ideas. I just have to really, really concentrate to get this across. There's a whole heap of things going across. So these books in the museum, on the front of the books, paper tape, and the paper tapes have the jokes on them that people who read paper tapes can understand, but not every curator, everyone has missed it, because you can't, they've lost the ability to read these paper tapes. So coming across here, one wonders, where does this slot in? This is very interesting historical document, because you get even looking down here, the modification signs are very large. They don't have a font for modification here. The numbers are different. I wish I could describe it. So it is an old book, but it's interesting to see how it's changed. Let's go back to we're on page 107, item number 76. Square root without factors may be demonstrated as a reverse. Square root without factors may be demonstrated as a reverse by obtaining squares of numbers. To build a square side of 25 ones and two 10-sits and 5 1-cubes. 400 blocks complete the square of 10s, 25 cubes. Okay. Oh yeah, I can see that. Adjacent side squares are made by hundreds of blocks and two rectangular pieces to be filled before the large square is completed. So this is building the square of 25, I think it is. So it shows you how to build the square for 25. Beautiful. Can I say that? It's absolutely beautiful. There's a picture of a 6. So 11 times 11 is 121. 625, which is, what's that squared? Is 25. So it's 25 squared. 25 times 25 is 165. The square root of 125 is obtained there. 600 blocks are arranged in the largest square possible, i.e. with two sides of 10s, two blocks left over. These are exchanged for 10 sticks, making 22 in all. Arranged in equal rows of 5 in two adjacent sides, two 10 sticks are left over, etc. And so you get the cubes and cube roots. Taking the edge of a small cube. This is a beautiful thing. Item 77. Cubes and cube roots. Taking the edge of a small cube as a unit of length of the volume, you get 2 cubed is 8, 3 cubed is 27. And each cube requires 3 dimensions. Instead of the cube, the edge of 4 unit lengths, i.e. 64 cubes. Each edge may be divided into two groups of 2 unit lengths and gives 8 smaller cubes, each 2 times 2. So we get the cube root of 64 is the cube root of 8 times the cube root of 8, which is 2 times 2, which is 4. It's a beautiful type of view. Now, the interesting thing is that your modern kids, do they have this understanding? They are given the understanding by drill and going through problems, but I don't think they understand as well. My overall thing. I recorded working as follows. 128 and 12. So, hundreds, three hundredths. I don't quite know. 3 times 1 of the hundredths is 3. 3 times 1 times 2 of the tens, 6. And 3 ones. I don't quite see how this is going. Common logarithms. Now, can I say one thing? So this is the cube, so I don't quite see what's going here. Can I say, this one of the things I do enjoy is logarithms. And it's one of these lonely things, like there's a sub of things, that, oh, I don't know, you're going through, not life crisis, you know, but coming to the end of your life. I know it sounds awful. And you say, you know what? I'd never found anyone else who really enjoyed my scattering the way I enjoyed it. And also, I don't think there's anyone who really enjoyed and appreciated logarithms the same I did. Yeah, that's one of those things in life. And just to really appreciate that there's a linear way of representing numbers and there's a logarithmic way of adding numbers. And so, A and B, A is big, if B is bigger than A, the log of B is slightly bigger than A, but in such a way that if you add the two together, you get another new number, which is the multiplication of the two. And just the sheer feeling that the entire system can be mapped onto a logarithmic system. And, you know, just a real wonder about it. And the fact that you go through life, and that's something that you really experience intensely. He experienced intensely in chemical reactions, looking at spectrometers and stuff like that. You experience such so intensely, and looking at optics, looking at the loss systems, looking at outputs, looking at vision. Your vision is very logarithmic. Your life's experience is much more logarithmic than it is additive. Because additives, you quickly forget things, but logarithmic, you know, your eyesight is logarithmic, you know, in terms of night vision versus day vision. All this beauty, you know, and you just see, you know, we're in a society and we've got, there's other more important things people are interested in. They're interested in and what's on telly, social media and stuff like that, such as life, so, I suppose it's sweet. And there's a good Australian saying, such as life. Now, because that's the issue. First of all, to gain the interest of the students, he is told about 3 centuries ago, Napier invented a short method of solving equations, so simple that this method of calculation has the following may be worked on the back of a postage stamp. So it's got okay, so 368.4 and 4.486 and 84.93 and 3834 times 47 divided by another similar amazing array of numbers equals 8.59. And the way you do it is you add the logs and subtract the divisions, get the log, and convert it back into a logarithm. This is just the logarithms. So you have to understand that if you multiplication, you add. Multiplication allows you to add. It takes it away from adding. Working knowledge of logarithms is first obtained by measuring a thousandth cube. The tenth stick is taken as a measure. The base for a number of systems used base 10. The thousandths can be measured based in 3 dimensions, length, breadth, and depth. 3 is called the logarithm of a thousand, and Beth 10 as written as log Beth 10 equals 3. 1,000 may be written either as 1,000 or 10 to the 3. It is explained that the logarithm of 3 corresponds to the index 3 with the base 10. The log 10 cubed is 3. Oh, you can. The hundreds of blocks, etc. 100 boxes measured the length, base 2, so on. Now, how we discovered logarithms and what logarithms really mean is something really cosmic, just so to speak, because it's involved obviously in equations and how we experience things and how things are really things scaled, but the actual wave functions aren't logarithmic. Just my overall view. The 100 boxes measured in length and breadth of 2, similar to log 2, hence 1,000 is log 2, 3, 1. This follows the observation, two rules may be deduced as followed. A student is asked to make this statement, 10 equals 100 may be made to correct the equation. It is readily suggested, since the relative by 10 by 10 to divide 100 by 10. So the equation is 10 times 10 equals 100, 10 equals 100 divided by 10. As the log of a number is the measure of that number, the log equals the number of equal numbers are equal. Hence, log of 10 times 10 is 10, which is, can I say, a beautiful thing. And the reason is that people had no computers, so you had to actually push people along the line of logs. So all this slide rule generation, the engineer with this slide rule is just this amazing thing. And it's interesting because my father used to make his own slide rules. But the log of 10 is 1 and the log of 100 is 2. It is found that the log of 10 has to be added to the log of 10, log of 10 to make the log of 100. Thus, the log of 10 times 10, log of 10 times 10 equals log of 10, 1 plus 1 equals 2. Further observations are made at the following table. After close inspection, the table rules are deduced. When numbers are multiplied, the logs are added. When they're divided, the logs are subtracted. Beautiful thing. This gives you a sort of a fact table of logs that they have here. So the log of a million is 6, which is a log of 100,000 plus 1. The table is inspected. A suggestion is to compare logs of whole numbers with the numbers of digits in the number leads to evolving a new rule. It's pointed out, so the log of 10 is the number of digits. Pointed out, so far, only whole numbers have to be considered and that the characteristic of a log has been considered, hence the rule. The characteristic of a log is always one less than the number of digits contained in the whole number. Okay, so, so a million actually has a 7-digit numbers. At a glance, the last table shows the log of 10 is 1 and the log of 1 equals 0. From this is assumed that the logs of numbers between 1 and 10 are fractions between 1 and 2. For practical purposes, the student accepts logs such as the number as supplied from the table of logarithms. So 3 is 0.4771. Hence the log of 300 is the log of 300 is 2.477. Yeah, that's right. The application of the rules discovered above, the students obtain characteristics from the log of the glance. For instance, 7 figures in a whole number of 3,000 would be 3, whatever it is. Oh, sorry, 3 million would be 6.4771. Given the log numbers in the first row column, the student can complete the table as follows. Okay. In logarithmic work, a small percentage of error may occur. It's so negligible that it's not worth considering for practical purposes. Even in 7-figure logarithms, the error is much less than the 4-figure word. To find the log of a number, now this is interesting. Suppose it is required to find the log of the number 3,684. I can almost do that in my head. So that's 4.47, something like that. And you keep on adding it. It's the whole number composed of 4, therefore the characteristic is 3. To find the minimum, the decimal part of the logarithmic tables are used. Alright. I have to sort of remember, I had to use log tables just in 1982. No. I think think they were just out at the end of the 70s. In a four-figure log table, the first column has a set of numbers 100 to 99 as a guide for two figures of the first number. The first two figures I can remember doing that. You won't remember, this is the old log tables. At a glance, the table shows the columns opposite these. The attendance columns for the third figure numbers are 0 to 10, having obtained the first two figures of each column. So this is, you don't have a calculator, you have to look it up. So he's explaining how to look it up. I won't read you past that. So this is the old log tables. And I don't think there's any benefit from doing it, but I do remember what they are. Ah, yes. So this is how the first two figures, the third figure is this, and the fourth figure is what you add to it. Extending the process and writing minus one, etc., is a table minus on the top. Now this is interesting. Here is that for a minus of a logarithm, they actually put a bar on top of it for some reason. I don't understand why, but this is what they do in particle physics. It's an antiparticle. Put the bar over the top because the charge, so you can tell the difference of a charge and whether it's not there. The whole particle is negative as opposed to negatively charged. From it's seen that the characteristic of a log, or you say a not statement, is put the bar on top of it. It's often when I say I'm writing notes, people will look over the top and you'll say, such as, oh no, I put the bar on top of that that says it's not that. And they don't understand. From this, it's seen that the characteristics of a log and a decimal fraction, the negative quantity, is one more than the number of noughts in the commencement of the fraction. Powers and roots of numbers. It's interesting to compare the logarithms of certain numbers. Take these various logs. Log of 8 is 3 the log of 2, and log of 2 is 3 dB. There you go. log of 2 is 0.301 03. Now the interesting thing is the dB is you multiply 10 by the minister to get yourself a dB, which is in the use in engineering, in optics. And so still there's areas of physics which you use are just abound with logs. Okay, just reading through this. And we're coming to the end, we're coming up to... From this calculation, students can deduce, I'm really skipping a lot through this because it doesn't translate into a podcast. So he's discovering logs, and somehow the blocks really don't really add into the logs, but he's got it included anyway. So it's really interesting now that I sort of understand that your entry point into a field and your touch base, here he has a product which is meant a different entry point and a different entry points and your entry point and your it's almost like a differential equation, your entry point and the interaction which feeds into your equation as you go along. So for this, he's got an entry point, a commercial entry point, and he's got a people buying his blocks. And so for certain things he has to cover every single customer because he's got to do a balanced thing, so he has to cover the high in mathematics, the logarithmics, he's got to cover everything for everyone to buy. It's really interesting to come across it. And so he's took this, which is gives a different inspection, rather than putting a cult of personality, which is sort of the personality cult is actually behind academic writing, because he's cite authors. So let's go. From the calculations, the student can deduce two principles that he can test in other ways. Logarithms of the x power of number is equal to the logarithm multiplied by x. Hence, 2 to the 3 is 2 log 3 is 0.447 times 2 is 0.942, which is the logarithm of 9 is 0.9542. The logarithm to the x root of a number is equal to the number's logarithm divided by x. That's the cube root of 8 is the log of 8 divided by 3, which is the same thing. Now we have 8.1. Problem. If a sum of £150 is divested at 5.5% of compound interest, what amount should be drawn after 21 years? Using the formula in the compound interest, we get... Now this is really beautiful. He's taught a very simple compound interest thing. £150 times 1 plus 5.5 on 100 to 21. So it's 150 by 1.055 to the 21. So it's 20. Oh, what's he doing? Okay, so he's the log of 150 times 21 times the log of 1.0055, which is 21 times 0.0232, which is £460. It's sort of a nice connection. So that's the end of this one. The next chapter is mensuration, and look, it's getting heavy, heavy maths. Calculus. So that's part 4, mensuration, which is okay. And then some other heavy, heavy, heavy parts. But this is part of this mode where I actually start really through a text. Whereas I think a lot of academics just graze a text to actually find out its, you know, the key piece of information. Which is very true that, I've read into, reviewed some education papers, and they've quoted a paper where they've misquoted the paper has said, we don't believe this belief, however our research has shown precisely the opposite. And then they will cite this paper as, this paper is supporting a particular type of belief. This is something I find again and again in education papers. But thanks a lot for listening, and I'll get back on to reading the next section. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.